Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In 2019, Charlotte launched its Vision Zero plan to reduce traffic fatalities to zero by 2030. That's just 4.5 years from now. But so far this year, we have experienced 35 fatalities, including 4 cyclists and 8 pedestrians. And the number of traffic fatalities here and throughout the state has been on the rise for the last decade. Getting back to those 35 fatalities in just the last 7 months, Shannon Binns, Executive Director of Sustain Charlotte, makes this point. If there was anything else happening in Charlotte that had caused that many people to die, everybody would be talking about it. So we'll talk about it this hour. Why is this happening? How unusual is this? Is Charlotte's Vision Zero plan a pipe dream, or is it possible? And what is and is not being done to make our streets safer? We're joined by Charlie Jones. He's Deputy Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation. That's CDOT for short. Seth LaJeunesse is Senior Researcher at the UNC Highway Safety Research Center. Eric Zeverell is Urban Design Specialist with Sustain Charlotte. And Alexandria Sands is here. She has reported extensively on this topic for Axios Charlotte. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Alex, I'm starting with you, Alex. You have reported on these traffic fatalities for a while. You report that in 2022, there were 66 deaths. In 2023, the number moved to 69. Last year, the number, I think, stood at 85. And this year, just over halfway through the year, we are already at 35. Is there a running theme here that you have been able to detect, a primary reason for these numbers to be rising?
I mean, of course, population growth is going to contribute to this. I think also the pandemic has been blamed a lot because of the way people were driving when the roads were empty. And I think we lean on that on a crutch. Another factor is seems like CMPD is doing less traffic enforcement. There was a New York Times report that tracked that data and saw that they were doing less. So I think there are a lot of different factors here. And then also just Charlotte being very car-centric, having a lot more traffic and taking a lot of time to start implementing some policies to be more bike-friendly and to have safer roads.
Eric, you're with Sustain Charlotte. Can you put these numbers, all these traffic death numbers, into some sort of context? How does it compare to other cities of similar size? Do you know?
Right. Well, you know, it's Vision Zero and trying to reach that goal is a struggle for most of the U.S., right? You really would have to look outside of the country to see the real stark differences between, safety, pedestrian, and bike fatalities. And that's because other countries are doing everything that Alex just mentioned. You know, they are investing in transit, sidewalks. They prioritize pedestrians on certain streets. They have options, right? And the enforcement, as Alex mentioned as well, they invest in enforcement. And so you have all of those factors that come together. So they really make a difference. It's not just one thing, unfortunately. We can't just lower our speed limits on the streets to 20 or 25 and call it a day, right? So the numbers are in line. Obviously, other cities, greater population, have more fatalities. But there's the cities that are investing, like Seattle, into transit already, prioritizing certain streets for pedestrians, and giving that option for them to be prioritized over cars. That makes a difference, where in Charlotte, we're not doing that just yet. You know, a lot of the cars have priority all over.
Charlie Jones, in the first year of the Vision Zero program, the Charlotte plan to reduce traffic fatalities to zero by 2030, there were 68 fatal crashes. I think that was back in 2019, somewhere in that neighborhood. Those numbers have stayed in that general range or have risen ever since. To the best of my knowledge, at least they haven't gone down. So what's your reaction to that? Why haven't they gone down if we've been pursuing these goals?
I think Alex and Eric both kind of hit a nail on the head. The increase in population, the growth, our car-centric city, it's a process to make the changes that really drive what in fact is mode choice and providing safer modes for all road users, especially pedestrian and cyclists. Those are our most vulnerable road users. And so the effort to rethink our streets and make changes to our streets isn't something we can do overnight. Cities like Seattle that have made good progress on that have been working at that much longer than we have. We've experienced, you know, rapid growth and pushed the city's boundaries out, and we were a very car-centric city until the early mid-2000s when we got our first light rail line. So we're working toward those goals, and you know, there's opportunities there throughout Charlotte to improve safety.
According to QC Nerve, another publication, while car and truck-related deaths have stayed nearly flat, the rise in pedestrian and motorcycle fatalities has grown. Is that because we have more congestion, more people have moved here, therefore we have more motor vehicle traffic? Is it because of inattentive cyclists and pedestrians? Is it because of bad drivers? Is it because of ill-designed roads? A combination of all of those things? What, Charlie?
I think one thing, and Seth may be able to back this up with national data, car manufacturers have done an incredible job of making vehicles safe for motorists. You're protected in a cocoon, if you will, when you're driving a vehicle. The protections for pedestrians and cyclists aren't there. They are truly vulnerable. And so if a collision occurs with a cyclist or a pedestrian, the chances of them being seriously injured or killed are extremely high because they don't have those protections that a vehicle offers its occupants.
Seth, chime in on that, because we have more cyclists on the roads. We've always had pedestrians using our roads along with motor vehicles. But when you've got a 5,000-pound car coming down the road at 25 miles an hour, your chances of not being injured or not being killed are slim.
You're right, Mike. And Charlie's exactly right. We've seen a shift over the last 15 years or so from the car occupants to people outside of vehicles, especially those who are not protected, right? Pedestrians, motorcyclists, they're kind of vulnerable, if you will. And they're vulnerable because, you're right, these cars are getting larger. They're actually weighing a lot more. And their front end is designed in such a way, especially the grills of certain trucks, that upon a strike of a pedestrian, they hit them at higher part of the body, thereby dragging them under the vehicle. More likely to be fatal in that sense. So when you have more people out there just exposed to more traffic, I'll note just one other thing quickly, Mike. E-commerce, van delivery to homes has doubled in the last decade or so in the US. I don't know what the reality is in Charlotte exactly, but I'd imagine it applies in Charlotte. So you just have more vehicles, usually of larger size, out there, presenting kind of a hazard to people that are, especially those outside of them.
Eric.
Yeah, I would just add on to all of that information that when a city's growing like Charlotte and you don't have options to get around except for by car, people start looking for options, right? So more and more folks are going to be trying to figure out how to buy a scooter, buy a bicycle, walk more, because they don't want to be stuck in traffic. So we also have that factor as well.
We have been encouraging people to seek out alternative forms of transportation, not just getting on the bus or the train, but using our greenways and the bicycle lanes that have cropped up on some streets, some protected, some not. And we've encouraged people to walk in a city that, except for the downtown grid, is not remarkably walkable. So you have these people using the roads that never used the roads before, roads that were not necessarily designed for this extra kind of traffic. Is that part of the problem, Charlie?
I don't know that it's a large part of the problem, but it's definitely the lack of choice, mode choice. and people's comfort with those choices. So you're right, we do have protected bike lanes in areas, and that is an exceptional choice for everyday life activities. And it provides a high level of comfort, and it gives motorists clear expectations, it gives cyclists clear expectations. And so part of our, planning, strategic mobility plan is to increase, exponentially, if you will, the number of bike lanes and sidewalks throughout the city and give people those choices so they do have a protected, safe, and comfortable way to move about the city.
Seth, according to a preliminary report from the Governor's Highway Safety Association, which is a national organization, it's not our governor, it's all governors. In 2024, drivers struck and killed 7,148 pedestrians, enough to fill more than 30 Boeing 737 jets at maximum capacity. This ties into Shannon Bin's comment that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about what's happening in Charlotte. If 30 passenger jets crashed in this country in a single year, some dramatic action would be taken. Why isn't this bigger news, Seth?
A great question, Mike. We've looked at this. Doesn't seem to really sort of draw the interest of the public, especially when if a crash is featured in news, it tends to be featured in sort of an isolated way, which I think this is the power of Alex's reporting, is putting it into broader context that this is a public health problem and this is common. So when you, for instance, if you have a report that says, well, the pedestrian crossed mid-block, maybe outside of a marked crosswalk, and a driver struck them, there's not going to be a lot of call for action because the focus is on what the pedestrian has done, the mistake maybe they made, right? Rather than the fact that this is happening all over the city, all over the country, all the time, right? So we need to draw back to the environments that people are having to operate in. You're right. I love this conversation around the fact that we are auto-oriented a lot in Charlotte and many other places in the US. And if you do want to take other modes, biking, walking, using a motorcycle, you're going to be in environments that are not always friendly to you, especially as the sun sets, the
Yeah.
nighttime crashes are a
Well,
major problem.
that report from the Governor's Highway Safety Association, not only does it say that pedestrian deaths are increasing at a rate far faster than overall traffic fatalities, nearly two-thirds are happening in locations without sidewalks. More than three-quarters of these deaths are occurring after dark, and light trucks and SUVs accounted for 54% of those fatalities. When we hear statistics like this, does it help planners like you and experts like you narrow our focus on possible solutions?
It does indeed. I mean, just the fact that you shared right there the context that these are happening in without places without sidewalks, that suggests that we need safe places for people to walk, right? When you mentioned the vehicles and especially their size, that gets to us to vehicle regulation at the federal level or working with people who are vehicle manufacturers to say, we've really, like to Charlie's point, we've focused so much on the car occupant over the years. But now maybe it's time to shift our focus to those outside the vehicle. They're doing that in other countries, especially in the European Union. I think we need to start taking these practices domestically, stateside.
But for the I only have 30 seconds. For the most part, in the European Union and other countries, their vehicles are smaller. We have these honking SUVs and light trucks that are no longer light, and that's what people want to buy, and that's what car manufacturers are going to make. You can't tell them not to, right?
This is true. It's both
Well,
cultural and regulatory, no doubt.
okay, we will explore part of that when we come back as well, and more about rising traffic fatalities despite Vision Zero being in place here and around the country when we come back to Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. Their curriculum aims to develop curiosity among middle schoolers and help them foster skills like critical thinking, collaboration, problem solving, and social awareness. More at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about traffic fatalities on the rise in Charlotte, despite our stated goal of having zero traffic fatalities by the year 2030, which, surprise, surprise, is 4.5 years from this moment in time. Charlie Jones is with us. He's the executive director of CDOT, the Charlotte Department of Transportation. Seth Lajeunesse is a senior researcher for the UNC Highway Safety Research Center. Eric Zavarel is an urban design specialist with Sustain Charlotte. And Alexandria Sands reports on all of this for Axios Charlotte. Alex, in one of your stories about the death of a 73-year-old cyclist, who we'll be talking about at some length in a moment or two, you say that Charlotte's streets are becoming more dangerous just because of fatalities. Is that what that's all based on, that comment?
Yeah, I think that we're putting millions of dollars into this Vision Zero plan, taxpayers are, and yet we're not really seeing any significant progress in reducing fatalities. And population growth does have something to do with that. But at the end of the day, like, these are people's lives that they're dying, and we are not talking about this. I think I'm sure we'll get into this more later in the show, but, you know, Vision Zero, they had an audit. It was not a good report. It said that they were not doing what they needed to do to complete their goal. And City Council has not talked about this audit. So this is a crisis that we're just not discussing enough as a city or as a nation.
We will talk about that. But Charlie, I want to give you a chance to respond to that. Are our streets becoming more dangerous?
I wouldn't say that they're becoming more dangerous. What we're seeing is increases that we're working toward the solutions for. Like I mentioned earlier, it does take time to build new infrastructure. We can't go out and tear up entire streets in a very rapid time frame, just from a funding and capacity standpoint to do that. Over the past year, our Vision Zero annual report will be coming out in a few weeks, and we highlight some of the things we've done over the past year. Things such as pedestrian hybrid beacons. We added 521 new streetlights. We constructed 4 miles of new sidewalks. So we're slowly working toward those things that would provide safer streets for all.
I'm not sure where the more dangerous parts of town are on the roads. Perhaps, Alex, you do, and you can say so if you do. But we have in Charlotte a network of roads. Some are controlled by the city, some are controlled by the state, some are controlled by the federal government. Can we, do we, have we made changes, Charlie Jones, to some of the streets that we don't control if they are the more dangerous venues?
So we do work, it's a very good question. We do work very closely with the North Carolina Department of Transportation for those streets within the city that they maintain. We compile crash data for those streets just like we do for the streets the city controls. I will say the set of facilities that we don't really have much say on traffic safety things are the interstates. Those are purely NCDOT under, you know, the guise of the federal government. But we do make recommendations and come up with solutions on state maintained roads, and NCDOT works closely with us to do those. We've installed pedestrian hybrid beacons on some of their streets. We actually maintain the sidewalk on state roads.
So, Alex, you may not know the answer to this question. I don't want to throw you a curve, but do you know what the more dangerous streets are, and who's responsible for them? Is it the city? Is it the state? Is it the federal government?
I can't tell you exactly where the more dangerous roads are, but I think I can give you a good example of something that the city is doing. Yes, Eric, go ahead. But I'm going to go ahead and say, I think a really good example of something that CDOT is doing is the road diets. So, and I actually think this is, I talked to Shannon about this with Sustain Charlotte. This could be a cheap solution. So on Matheson Avenue right now, they are planning to do a road diet. And I'm sure this annoys the heck out of drivers, but there are orange cones all over the place as they prepare to do this construction. They've been there for a while. I have biked and ran on this road, and I feel much safer just because there are these orange cones. So there are places in the city where we can put up these cheaper type of structures. And, you know, if I close my eyes when I'm running, I feel like I'm on the South End Rail Trail and I feel a lot safer. But that's a matter of political will at the end of the day, whether or not you want to annoy drivers and shut down half their lane. And Eric could probably speak a little bit about how long term that could actually help reduce traffic.
So, Eric, before you respond, and I know Charlie wants to respond to this too, but Eric, what is a road diet for people who may not be aware of that term?
Yes. So it basically, you could think of it as, to flip it around, it's adding more things to the road. So don't think of it taking away a lane for cars, but you're now adding wider sidewalks, bike lanes. And even if you don't bike or walk, it like the Plaza road diet basically shrunk that road from four lanes to two, but it also made the road safer for all the neighbors, and the folks who don't bike or walk wanted it because they knew that it was going to make that road safer, slowing down traffic. It prevents people from, trying to pass other drivers. And a lot of the time when you bring those lanes down, you add a center turn lane, which makes it a lot safer for cars as well. So they're not, and to answer your question before about what's dangerous roads, it's any of the four lane roads and the ones that especially do not have that center turn lane, because you have folks trying to make left turns. There's no space for them. The cars that are behind them are impatient, and so they're going around them. And then, that's where all the accidents happen. And then people want to speed up because they felt like they lost time waiting and behind that person trying to make that left turn. So that is the dangerous streets, and they're a combination of both the city streets and state.
Charlie, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, actually, a couple of things I'll touch on there. One, where the dangerous streets are, we publish a high accident network every year, and it's a 4-year aggregation of all the fatal and serious injury crashes. So we know the streets where we're experiencing fatal and injury crashes. That information is available to the public on the city's website. We have a Vision Zero dashboard, so people can actually go and look at their streets or the streets they travel on and understand what some of the safety issues are on those streets. Talking about road diets, and to circle back to the city trying things and moving things quickly, we recently completed a road diet evaluation for Kenilworth, outbound Park Road, right between East Boulevard and Old Park Road. We took that down from two lanes to one lane over the course of, I believe, about 30 days to
Yes, I
evaluate the
noticed.
impact on traffic. And we got very good feedback from the residents in the area to Alexis Alexandria's point. People liked being able to walk there and not,
But
have
Charlie,
cars.
that brings up an interesting problem that Charlotte faces. And Seth, you may want to chime in on this too. Kenilworth Avenue, as anybody who uses it knows, between Park Avenue, but between Park Road and East Boulevard, and then beyond, down to the downtown area, it's a thoroughfare. It's what people use to get to work uptown if you live in that area, if you live in the South Park area or the Sedgefield area. And when you take it down to one lane, is that the right thing to do?
Is that question for Seth or
It can be for either of you. Anybody who wants to be on the hot seat.
Well, I think from CDOT's perspective, that's why we used temporary devices to evaluate what that may do, especially during the peak hours. And what we found was the impact was not significant. It wasn't something that created a bottleneck all the way to Uptown or created a bottleneck all the way to Tivola Road. We went through a lot of these conversations many, many years ago when we did our first road diet, which was East Boulevard. Our director at the time took a lot of heat from the restaurants and businesses along East Boulevard with the plan to road diet that road. And what we've seen is traffic adjusts, people find new ways. People actually can walk and bike now on East Boulevard. So we took cars off the road, and we provided a very nice community through there. We've
So,
done many road diets like that.
Seth, you're a senior researcher for the UNC Highway Safety Research Center. So I'm going to assume that you know the answer to this question. How do you balance this out? If you have a road like Kenilworth Avenue, which is a thoroughfare into and out of downtown from certain areas of town, and which has a high volume of traffic, one would imagine, in mornings and afternoons when people are going to work and coming home from work. How do you balance that with the needs of people who bought houses in that neighborhood, who know that that's a thoroughfare and they knew it when they bought the house, but you want to make things safer and easier for them? How do you balance that out?
Well, you know, the balance really comes in. What are you trying to achieve there? So safety certainly could be a goal. Maybe noise reduction is another goal for the neighbors there. I don't know. Generally speaking, if you want to do a road diet, one, I'll just say that road diet is a terrible frame. People don't like diets in general, right? I know some colleagues in Minnesota call it a road buffet, to Eric's point around providing actual options. But basically, if there's 20,000 vehicles per day or so, or lower than that, then road diets usually don't really function, you know, affect operations or, you know, traffic patterns very much. I would look at the network. So if I were, you know, working with Charlie, would look at the network to see if there's a parallel route, if traffic could be diverted to that area. And this road could be used for different purposes. There's just a number of ways. It's always in context, right? Does this make sense in this context? You always have to ask that question.
Eric, the cyclist that I referred to, because Alex wrote about him, was named Bill Yoder, whose daughter writes Sustain Charlotte's newsletters, often yes, focusing on road safety. And your executive director, Shannon Binns, wrote the lead article in the newsletter that dealt with Mr. Yoder's death, saying that, quote, streets and intersections like the one where Bill lost his life are engineered for speed, not safety. But they can be redesigned and must be, and we also need a cultural shift. Explain what he means by needing a cultural shift.
Yes. Basically, our environment where we live creates a certain culture, right? We're all used to being able to hop in our cars and drive everywhere, right? And when we can't get there when we normally are used to, whether it was like 15 minutes, 12 minutes, and now it's up to 20, the half hour, and that will increase. That's going to continue to go up. That culture then, you know, is what we are currently living in. And people get more frustrated. And, you know, that gets road rage. And so people will start disobeying the road rules, right? Just because they've been sitting in traffic and that anger grows. So that's the culture that we need to change. And changing that is by changing the environment, the built in, you know, how streets are designed, how we move, how we live. And that's what countries like the Netherlands did. You know, we had the bike, Think Bike workshop back in May here that Charlie was a part of. And what they did was they really created a systematic approach of being able to prioritize certain streets for certain modes, transit, bike, pedestrian, and then cars, and really trying to improve the cars on those certain streets to create that network. And do the same thing for each mode. And that is how you really start changing things. You know, more people are out, they see how people out biking and walking. That then changes their minds when they're driving. And or maybe they were driving all the time and now they are starting to bike and walk.
And Charlie, we've been talking about changing things for motorists, these road diets, shrinking lanes from 2 to 1, et cetera, and slowing traffic down. But there are some roads that were designed and I think will remain that way for cars. And Woodlawn Road is one of those roads. It starts its life as Billy Graham Parkway. It becomes Woodlawn. It becomes Wendover. It becomes Eastway. I think it becomes something else after that. And it was designed, if I'm not mistaken, as a thoroughfare from one end of town to the other, from the west side to the east side. So was that a mistake to build that highway that way years and years and years ago? Or is it a mistake not to offer bikers, cyclists, an alternative route and keep them off that road?
Good question, Mike. And I use a big word. The Route 4 is a circumferential road that gets right people from one side of Charlotte to the other. It wasn't a mistake that it was built the way it was. I think what's happened is the growth in Charlotte has created a situation where there aren't many choices for motorists to get from one side to the other. That gets back into the strategic mobility plan that Charlotte has, where you try and match employment, housing, and mode choices so people don't have to drive from Eastway to the airport. Maybe they can have good employment and all the things they need near their home that they can bike and walk to. I don't think we throw our hands up and say Woodlawn Road is Woodlawn Road and it needs to be this. One of our founding principles of Vision Zero is protecting human lives takes the priority over all other things within our transportation network. So if there are opportunities along Woodlawn Road through redevelopment or through capital projects, partnerships with NCDOT, that is an NCDOT facility, to rethink how that road functions, that's where we are. Those are the things we're looking at on a daily basis.
Eric.
Yeah, I would just add that, we talked about road diets. Well, one of those concepts is to add mass transit. You take a lane away from cars only to add mass transit, and maybe Woodlawn would be a great example of how you move more people more efficiently, safer across town, is by using mass transit on that corridor, right? So that's another concept of, not the diet, but adding more efficient modes of transportation across that area. And then doing things where roads like Park Road or any of the other roads that intersect Woodlawn, there's things called protected intersections where you really could engineer it and make it safe for bikes, pedestrians to cross at those areas.
Is this difficult to do, Seth? Is it expensive to do to make these kinds of changes that Eric's just talking
Monumentally expensive, Mike,
about?
but absolutely
And
necessary. This
there's
is
the
a public health
problem.
problem. If we're going to be serious about this, it's a public health problem. It's causing undue harm. I mean, when you think of every fatality, there's at least 100 serious and life-altering injuries associated with that. So if you take nationally, 40,000 people die, multiply that by about 100, and that's how many people are affected, and then their family members and community members, right? So it's really a staggering. So I guess the question is it worth the cost? It seems like, yeah, it probably is. But like to Charlie's point, we have to devote our focus and our efforts toward making incremental improvements and not continually making the same mistakes that we had in the past. And I would include, Mike, the mistake of trying to mix different uses. So like if you think of an arterial or larger road with 4+ lanes, right? But you have lots of access to businesses and homes off of that. You have both mobility, fast movement, and people using that to try to access places, crossing the road. It becomes too complex and thereby dangerous.
So as Seth said, it's monstrously expensive, and we have thrown millions of dollars at this, and we'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about traffic fatalities rising in Charlotte despite our Vision Zero plan, which aims to reduce them to zero by 2030. And we're talking about it with Charlie Jones, who's Deputy Director of the Charlotte Department of Transportation. Seth Lajeunesse is a senior researcher for the UNC Highway Safety Research Center. Eric Zaverill is urban design specialist with Sustain Charlotte, an organization that has been promoting safer driving and more room for bicyclists and pedestrians for years. And Alexandria Sands has been writing about this for Axios Charlotte. A couple of emails I want to share with you before we launch into more questions from Stephanie. I live off Monroe Road, and I feel like I'm going to be rear-ended because of speed daily, like it's dangerous to make a right turn into the neighborhood. Traffic and dangerous drivers often make me want to move. And I am a native. A comment from Sarah on Facebook. Somehow the rising generations, meaning the younger people, are not seeming to internalize the true risks of being at the wheel, and they think it's fine to divert their eyes while driving. What is, as my dad taught me when I learned many years ago, a death machine, meaning cars. They are a death machine. You can urban design things all you want, but if drivers won't watch what's around them, they will keep hitting animals and people. And sometimes these larger vehicles, you can't see animals or people because of the way those cars are designed, particularly the closer you get to them. Alex, you report that due to Vision Zero, Charlotte has been investing millions in pedestrian crossings and hosting events to spread awareness of safe driving. Do you know who's attending these events and how many? Are we preaching to the choir here?
Charlie might know that better than I would, because they're the ones throwing them.
Okay, Charlie?
So we do host events and try and get the message out. Our Vision Zero community team actually went to a school yesterday and met with students. So we're trying to spread that message of safety at all levels through the community. I don't have the numbers of events we did last year, but it was several. Our Community Safety Fest is coming up. To your point, though, I do believe oftentimes we do preach to the choir. We see that in city government. The same people show up to community meetings, and those people that are interested are usually passionate, and we need passionate people for that. Yeah. But getting the broader message out has always been a challenge.
The number of traffic fatalities and pedestrian and bicyclists fatalities have been on the rise ever since Vision Zero started. But I don't want to give people the impression that Vision Zero isn't making any progress. That would be inaccurate. According to CDOT, between 2021 and 23, you installed 22 pedestrian hybrid beacons. Those are the lights that tell people that pedestrians are crossing. 19 rectangular rapid flashing beacons. You constructed 40 miles of new sidewalks, 29 miles of new dedicated bike lanes, as well as installing 4,600 streetlights in high injury areas to increase visibility. How do those accomplishments, Charlie, compare to what you and others believe needs to happen if you want to reach Vision Zero's goal?
So one of the things Vision Zero is, it's a holistic thing. It takes the entire community. It takes our law enforcement partners. It takes the judicial system. All of those things really have to work together to drive collisions, serious injury and fatal collisions down. So CDOT's focus is on that hard infrastructure and the programming of those things. And through our Vision Zero Task Force, we work with other outside groups to come up with strategies for enforcement, education, and those things to try and reduce the incident of fatal and serious injury collisions. More than a third, or right at a third, of our collisions are speed-related. Fatal crashes are speed-related, and typically it's excessive speed with the occupants not wearing seatbelts, which, you know, I know you and I, Mike, grew up in a time when seatbelt laws were not there. And your car didn't ding at you if you drove out of the driveway with the seatbelt off. And so it's amazing to me that, you know, we have motorists that operate vehicles that find a way to keep the noise from bothering them while they drive unbuckled.
Eric, that the Governor's Highway Safety Association report that I talked about several segments ago lists some infrastructure changes that seem to have a positive impact, because this is a nationwide effort. This Vision Zero thing is nationwide. It's not just in Charlotte. And they've listed some things that seem to have a positive impact on reducing pedestrian fatalities, like limiting the number of lanes pedestrians must cross to get from one side of the street to the other, creating refuge islands in the middle of the street to give them a place to stop if the traffic restarts, electric crossing signs that allow pedestrians to cross before cars have access, and banning right turns on red, among other things. Are these things the same things that you have been promoting? Are these things that you see happening more and more here, thanks to the efforts of Vision Zero and CDOT and others? Where do we stand in this equation?
Yeah, I think all of those things need to be done. It's not one thing, Mike, that is going to really solve this problem. I think the right turn on red might be something we haven't done a whole lot. It's there, but I think everybody's talked about it today. One key thing missing is enforcement. If nobody's there and there's no penalty for running a red light, running a stop sign, making that turn on red when you're not supposed to, people are just going to continue to do it, right? And just one thing, I know you talked about spending, and you made a point that we spent millions of dollars on Vision Zero, right? Do you know how much we spent on road in the last 10 years? And it's statewide. Yeah, it's at least just a quick look. It was over $3 billion. And nobody ever questions how much money we spend, taxpayers' dollars, on roads. Now, that's not city roads, that's state and federal highway roads,
But
right? But if we spend
don't
more
we
money,
but don't we have to? This state and this city are not set up to be bicycle or even pedestrian friendly. This whole state, all the roads in the state became, and the city of Charlotte was designed for cars.
right. I'm not saying, I'm just pointing out that we need to spend more money, and
Okay.
there's at least $1 billion worth of sidewalks in Charlotte to be built. So a million, a couple million, 5 million, 8 million is not going to really, put a dent to see the movement in Vision Zero, what we've been doing. We're going to need to
Okay.
do more spending on that.
Seth first, then Alex, because Seth had his hand up first. Go ahead.
Eric made a great point around, automotive infrastructure is super costly, especially like interstate infrastructure. So yeah, it is a cost, right, to Charlotte and other cities to improve safety across a network. Roadways are extremely expensive. And there are states that have actually put moratoria on road building and expanding, despite the fact that they're growing. Colorado is a great example. In 2022, they put a moratorium on that. You can sort of re-envision the way that people move about your state. There's just too much driving in too many places.
Yeah.
And so it
Alex?
can happen.
Alex?
Yeah, I just want to take us back to the year 2023 when House Speaker Tim Moore came here and he kind of upended our transportation plan, which originally we were looking at a transportation plan that had a lot more funding for bikes and pedestrians. And that same week when he came here and he said that we needed more money for roads, that same week I think we had three fatalities, two pedestrians, one bicyclist. So I think that just kind of speaks to this whole conversation, this culture, that we are not taking this problem seriously at all.
We're going to run out of time, and we do need to talk about the lack of enforcement because, Alex, you've written about this, and you point out that despite Vision Zero's plan to eliminate all traffic fatalities by 2030, there are no benchmarks. I want to come back to that. But you also say that part of the blame can be placed on CMPD for not concentrating enforcement efforts in areas where the most deaths and injuries occur. Where should that be centered? What, if anything, has CMPD had to say about their approach to this? Alex.
I believe CMPD has said that they concentrate enforcement in these high injury networks. Charlie might be able to speak more to that and confirm it, but the audit that the city's audit department did specifically called out CMPD multiple times for not doing that and also not tracking data, which is really important because then we don't know where exactly the crashes are happening. I mean, of course they're tracking some. We've been talking about data this whole time, but they say that it's not enough and that we don't have the correct
Well,
locations. And then going back to that New York Times report, the Charlotte traffic stops had fallen 35%.
and you recently reported that CMPD Chief Johnny Jennings said there is not as much time to go out and enforce traffic as there
Right.
used to be, and that more resources like red light cameras and speed cameras would help. Is there less time for traffic enforcement because the department is stretched thin, insufficiently staffed for a growing, increasingly dense city, or has their attention been diverted by necessity to fighting crime?
Right. Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up because I did want to touch on the red light cameras. And the culture that Charlotte has with running red lights, because the police department, they are stretched thin. They have been short officers in recent years. And Chief Jennings has acknowledged this, and he said that things like drones, cameras can help. There was a law recently passed to allow speed cameras in school zones. So that's something that City Council could talk about. But again, just like it just doesn't seem like a priority because, people ask all the time, can we get red light cameras to try to have some extra enforcement? And they are controversial and they're debatable, but it's just not something that's even been discussed in recent
Well,
years at all.
Charlie, you can address this because at some point in time we had a series of intersections, mostly downtown, where there were red light cameras and they were removed, and it had to do with revenues and things like that. But explain why we haven't made more of a push toward those kinds of things. Is there a great deal of driver-citizen pushback against them? Is it because of revenue-sharing obstacles? Is it because we can't put them up for legal reasons? What's the reason?
So you're right. We did have a red light camera running program. We actually had a speed camera program for several years during that. The biggest obstacle we faced with the red light cameras was the revenue piece. When the program was originally set up, we used the clear proceeds to pay the camera operator for the program. So it essentially cost the taxpayers nothing. Supreme Court ruling and interpretations of the state constitution made it such that we couldn't keep any of the citation revenue and had to give it all to the school system. And at the time, the thought was we weren't willing to pay for a program. The city would essentially have to pay for the program. Right. I think with this recent legislation that's passed, the city of Greensboro actually found a way to work with their local school system to institute a red light camera program. I think the options are there. It is something the Vision Zero Task Force has identified as worth our efforts to explore. Of course, anything like this would have to go to city council and it would be debated there. I think the public in general, I don't want to, you know, completely blanket statement, but I think most people are surprised that we don't have that because it is so prevalent in other areas. Virginia has camera enforcement all over. The city of Alexandria has just an incredible automated enforcement program that covers everything.
Yes, and so, you best not drive over the speed limit in Alexandria, let me tell you.
My oldest son can attest to a camera ticket in Virginia from earlier this summer. So I did want to circle back to one thing Alexandria mentioned about the Vision Zero audit and the data collection from CMPD. We know where the collisions occur. CDOT staff gets all of the crash reports, and part of the audit finding was not that they weren't locating the crashes. Is sometimes those crashes, the location, we have to do a little extra work. All that does is slows down how quickly the data is available. And the audit team recommended that all police officers enter the XY coordinates. And so that's the change we've made. The software developers actually doing that. It's really nothing to do with how safe things are. It's more of a data issue.
So I have 2 minutes left. Eric, I want to ask a very quick answer to this question. Are cyclists and pedestrians faultless in all of this? Are there things that they should be doing that they're not doing that contribute to these rising fatalities?
It's a tough one, Mike, but I would say that, you know, if you're really paying attention as a driver, you shouldn't be hitting a pedestrian or cyclist, unless that person, cyclist, or is running into the car, right? The problem is drivers are distracted. Most of them don't want to drive. They're doing social media on their phones, or doing work. They're not driving. So there's still a lot more fault for drivers, and they should be in control of their car all times, and they're not. They're distracted, and they're hitting cyclists and pedestrians.
And sorry, Seth, North Carolina state government has a lot of varied interests and coalitions that need funding for various things at the very same time. The federal government seems to be handing more responsibility for funding almost everything back to the states, where there's probably not enough money to fund all the things that they have to fund now. Is there political will? Is there money enough to make improvements needed to increase safety on our roads, Seth?
Yes, Mike, there certainly is. If we use it wisely and where the greatest risks are on our network to protect people, I think most certainly.
Is there political will?
Political will is another question. I think we need to start with piloting.
Is there political understanding? Because we have a lot of lawmakers from rural parts of the state that don't understand the urban areas.
This is a rural issue too. Our number one crash type, serious crash type, is runoff road crash type in the rural areas. So this impacts people in the rural counties as well.
I have 30 seconds, Charlie. How optimistic are you that you can reach Vision Zero goal of zero fatalities by 2030. It's 4.5 years from now.
Very optimistic with political will and partnerships. As long as we're able to get the partnerships and the political will, as we've mentioned several times, I think we can definitely move that needle toward zero.
Charlie Jones is Deputy Director of CDOT. Seth LaJeunesse is a Senior Researcher for the UNC Highway Safety Research Center. Eric Zavarrill is Urban Design Specialist with Sustain Charlotte, who's been advocating for this for years, and Alexandria Sand has been reporting on it for years. For Axios Charlotte, thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.